Hi everyone, and welcome to the fourth series of Creativity Sucks, a podcast from Creative Review which looks at the ideas, trends and topics that are preoccupying the worlds of advertising and design today. My name is Eliza Williams, I'm the editor of Creative Review and I'll also be your host for this show, where today we're going to discuss humour in advertising. Now I'm well aware that analysing humour might not sound very funny, but nonetheless that's what we're going to try and do today. To look in particular at why it pays for brands to use humour in their ads and whether jokes can translate across different continents and generations. To help me get to grips with all this, I have three hopefully quite funny guests, who are Lindsay Atkin, Executive Creative Director at 4 Creative, Channel 4's in-house agency, Hunter Ellenbarger, founder of the content studio Star Quality and former creative lead for YouTube's social team, and Rob Dobal, CCO at McCann UK. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Hi, everyone.
So to kick us off, I'd just like to get your view on advertising's use of humour at the moment, because it feels to me that in the last year or so, after quite a long period of brands being really quite po-faced and serious, suddenly comedy is back. I'm interested to know if you all agree with this, and if you do, why is it back? Rob, I'm going to come to you first.
Oh, thanks, Eliza. I do, yeah. I think there has been a big resurgence in humour and comedy used in advertising comms. And to be honest, I wasn't too surprised that it went away a bit, given, I guess, the state of the world. I think COVID was understandably a bit of a dampener on, you could say, the world's general mood, and you could say the thoughtfulness of brands to be, you know, making the right messages and hitting the right tone in comms surrounding that. And I think it has taken a few years. But if I think back, if we all think back just before COVID, and actually more back into the 90s, comedy was a major, major part of advertising. And I remember, for one, getting into advertising after watching, this is many years ago, I think it was Tarrant on TV. Do you remember Chris Tarrant? He used to do a show, and he would basically take all the clips from around the world, from South America and Japan and China, and he basically run all the really banned or terrifically funny ads from around the time. And that's what first caught my eye. And I thought, wow, how are they getting away with making that stuff? And when I got into the industry, it was almost like an ad. Comedy writing was kind of a big part of why you went into the job. So to see it dwindle and become more serious, understandably, you know, through COVID, I am pleased that it's coming back, and it's kind of bringing a bit more color and humility and life to the industry. So yeah, I do think there's been a resurgence. I think it probably had a dampener because of COVID and the sense of purpose which brands thought they should and have to play in the world. So wasn't too surprised.
Purpose also, interestingly, I think, I wonder if it stretches back a bit before COVID. But Lindsay, what do you think?
I definitely think it was pre-COVID when we were in peak purpose, weren't we? And we were like, what's the old adage, you know, it's impossible to win an Oscar for a comedy. I think there was a lot, and it became a bit of a, you know, the snake began eating its own tail, didn't it? Where we kept awarding things that were very purposeful or good. And then it didn't mean there weren't brilliant people who can write comedy out there. It probably just meant that, you know, I think brands were, or whatever we were chasing, I think it became this sort of this good in the world. And that's not saying a brand purpose is a very different thing from purpose for good, right? You know, just to be clear on that, brand purpose is a very good thing, but being very worthy with it. I think, yeah, we just got lots of that, didn't we? And there was talk of, we've had too much of this, and then the pandemic hit, and then the Plinky Plonky Pianos came out, and I think there was a responsibility from certain brands to be thoughtful and be mindful. I do also think, like, you know, comedy has tragedy in it, and we were going through an incredibly tragic time, and I think there were some funny spots through that time, and they stood out because We just weren't seeing a great deal of it. So, yes, I think we probably could have seen more of it through COVID. I'm delighted we're seeing more of it on the other side of it.
Yeah, because while we may feel like we're out of COVID, things still feel fairly heavy going, to say the least, at the moment, I think.
Oh, it's really bad, isn't it? Like, really, really bad. No one's having a good time. And I think, you know, we have a responsibility to entertain. And I think, you know, I think that's probably a bigger point than us talking about. I think there is, humour is entertainment, essentially. And I think now is the time when we could all do with something which isn't just incessant, relentless gloom.
Hans, what's your view on this? Because I feel like you come from a slightly kind of different world, obviously still doing stuff for brands and so on, but not in quite the same way, maybe.
Yeah. I definitely agree about just the reaction to COVID and all of the sort of dark traumas we all experienced together, like leading us to a place where we need escapism. And I think humor is like great for escapism. I think also in 2020, like the media landscape started to change with like the rise of TikTok and short form video. I think you saw TikTok and then Instagram Reels and now YouTube Shorts, and those platforms really reward shareable humorous things. You're less likely to share something that's super serious maybe than you are that's a meme. So I think brands have sort of also adapted to this new just meme filled environment that we're all in, which I think is also, yeah, like a form of escapism from some of the more troubling times, unprecedented times.
Unprecedented. That was the word of COVID, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think, just then speaking about brands doing memes, and it'd be interesting to hear from you, Rob, as well on this, is like, but Hunter, is that sort of safe territory for brands to try and sort of go into a kind of space which it feels like it really works when people are doing it authentically and from their own thing rather than necessarily as a brand? Or can they do that and do it well?
It's really risky for brands. I think there's that meme of Hey Fellow Kids where it's like, or what is the other one? Like there's, it might just be like Die Brand and it's like a crab shooting lasers or something when like a brand tries to insert themselves. So it's definitely risky, but I do think like the classic example is Duolingo, who's done it really well, which I always find to be interesting because you wouldn't think that, you know, a language learning app that's really wholesome in its kind of design and positioning would do the craziest stuff ever on social. But I feel like that they cracked a formula on how to do it well. But yeah, I think a brand needs to sort of have like the street cred to do the meme. So you can't just like overnight start doing it. You have to build like a real community on social that responds, and you start creating inside jokes with the audience, and then that's how you can kind of build your way towards like a shared humor. So it can work, but it's definitely more of a marathon, not a sprint, I guess.
Yeah, totally. And there is, as you were saying at the start, kind of a lot of risks that you'll be kind of laughed at rather than laughed with, which I guess is the worst case scenario always for these things.
Totally.
Yeah. I have twin daughters, 14, and they're going through a wonderful stage at the moment that it's incredibly easy for me to embarrass them. And Hunter, you were saying, you know, it's a bit like, you know, follow me, kids, hey, kids. And I always say to them, look, if you misbehave, I'm going to come and dance at your disco, which would 98% be a failure. But I guess in kind of analogous with this, if I were to go to dance classes with them for 12 weeks and then turn up the disco and then actually be really good, it might be a success. But I think that's probably the only way it's going to be a success.
Yeah. I like how the dad turning up at the disco is a thing that goes down the ages, though, because I think, you know, that's so... when I was that age, that was the worst embarrassment possible.
We'll probably make a good TikTok now. So.
Indeed, there you go.
It's funny. There are a couple of brands who I think have made that leap onto the dance floor, and that they may or may, you may not have expected them to be that or not. But things, I think Ryanair is pretty good on Instagram, and Liquid Death, you know, started from an easier place to be dancing at that disco, but they also do a good job, I think, of bring comedy to the social platform. So I think it can be done, but Hunter rightly says it can be risky because you're trying to join the motorway, and if you get it wrong, you're going to crash.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if the Ryanair example reminds me of, like, the state of New Jersey has, like, a Twitter or X account, I should say. And I think in some of the humor, too, it's like now we've gotten to a place where audiences understand, like, there is a real person, a real social media manager behind these accounts. So, like, if, you know, the internal marketing team and brand teams empower this person and give trust to them, then their own humor kind of transmits. I think where it gets into the hey fellow kids territory is whenever, you know, you're having the design by committee brand standards, like remix this meme to get it out on the ground. I think it's like when the real person can connect with the real people on the other side, then whether it's like New Jersey, an airline, a language learning app, like you can find success. But yeah, I think Eliza, you mentioned just authenticity. I think that that's easier said than done in the humor category too.
Totally. It's interesting what you're saying, that those brands that were kind of saying it, doing it well, seem to mostly be doing it from a kind of in-house position, which leads me neatly to you, Lindsay. Like, do you, is that, do you find that you know, having a kind of strong in-house team does make it easier to kind of respond quickly, I guess, because as we're talking a lot about social at the moment, like that requires a quick reaction often.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, at Full Creative, we don't. So we actually don't run our socials. We aren't the people reacting to things. That's run from a different department, because, of course, in-house, you do have lots of things called departments because you're not all one agency. So it throws up a load of other questions. No, so we don't, actually. And sometimes that can be frustrating for us because we can go, well, what if we do this? And then, of course, you have, rightly, you know, somebody has a schedule and all of those things, and the humor comes from a different voice. It doesn't actually come from Full Creative. And, you know, and some, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you go even in house, sometimes I'll look at our social and go, oh, that's funny. And sometimes we're like, that's not, you know, so that's the thing, isn't it? You'll always, there'll always be something because it is a real person. And I think that's right, as it sort of should be. You know, it's not just socials that get killed by, you know, the brand, capital T, capital B, coming in and saying, we want it to be like this, kids. You know, film is exactly the same. You know, it isn't just the reactive stuff, it's everything. It's kind of, you know, there is a bit of a science to comedy. There is a bit of a thing as to what is funny and what can land. And I think it's like a lot of things in advertising, there are practitioners who know what's funny and why it's funny, and sometimes we just need people to trust us, and or to trust those people. And but I mean, that's a big conversation about instinct and research and all of those conversations we keep having a lot in advertising at the moment. But yeah, that's feels like an entirely different podcast series, I think.
Yeah, although it's, I mean, it's sort of interesting to me as someone outside of it all, like how much analysis does happen when you're making, because often, you know, often a really funny ad, it is instinct and it is, it feels like something, you know, that's, it's just going to happen quickly, but I presume it goes through all the tests. I mean, Rob, how is that process kind of unfunny and painful a lot of the time? Or do you find that people, if the client gets the joke and the, it can roll quickly?
Yeah, there can be, there are many gatekeepers. And I think it would just, there's a little bit of distinction between who you're making laugh and on what platform. So with more social management, if you get the tone of voice right and it feels authentic, as Hunter says, then you will be accepted as managing your community well. But then also there are brands which should and could be creating content, or which I would, you know, include an ad to be content, because if it's funny enough or good enough, then it's going to be on socials. So it's kind of, they join somewhere in the middle. So you can have more planned comedic activity at events, which you hope will penetrate social really well, and that happens all the time. If you but equally, if you just get your tone of voice right on social, then you'll create a massive following which will be loyal. And Aldi, we're a good example of people who kind of, you know, play the pirate and not the navy, kind of Robin Hood of retail. And I think that's a very, and people love them for that. And they just get the tone of voice right, which opens up so much activity. But in terms of who's the arbiter of what's funny, I think anyone who's tried to write comedy will first have the gate of the people around them, then you'll have your clients, then you'll have research, and then you'll have, and that is always painful unless you get a clean run all the way through, and which is pretty rare. So I think it's, as Lindsay said, I think the teams and the brands and the agencies who respect the original authorship of that type of comedy will either create a new type of comedy that works, and you know. So I think, yeah, respecting the artist, but equally, sorry, I'm rambling now. But with, you know, classic comedy writing, you know, TV shows and films and duos, they all have massive read tables and just keep going and going until everyone goes, yeah, that's pretty funny. So it's not alien to the process. And stand-up comics will basically try their material all the time, find the six jokes that work every time, and then and build from there. So there is an element of, and that's a very human thing, right? I try two jokes in a row. If I don't get any laughter, I'm not doing it a third time. So it's a natural process, and you know, comedy has to land somewhere, unless you're getting into, which I find a really hilarious subject, is comedy that makes only you laugh is still a very valuable thing. Yeah, and that's a good kind of, I think I probably fall into that, into that bucket.
I'm guessing that's harder to sell to a brand though, if it's, but just like for individual.
Not impossible.
So I'm interested as well in on this, like this idea of humor and so on, like how, because one thing I heard in the kind of real heavy purpose times, that one of the things that people sort of talked about with humor was that it was, you know, and I feel this when I think of the kind of comedy I saw when I was growing up, you know, sort of the era of Tango and so on, which obviously come back recently, it was quite British comedy. It felt like it was quite British comedy and quite sort of distinctive to a certain sort of cultural sort of tendency. And then similarly, when I look at, say, the Super Bowl ads, so this year, you know, US Super Bowl ads, really heavily comedic, that seemed to be the thing. Celebrities and comedy were the two prongs, but it felt like some of that comedy to me felt very American, and while I could see the joke, it didn't kind of crack me up. And I wonder, I suppose, what I'm trying to get to is, can you make a global TV campaign that everybody's going to laugh at, or do you have to accept that this is localized? Hunter, what do you think on this as someone in the US?
One of my favorite ads from the Super Bowl this year was the Beyonce ad with Verizon. And I think I wrote about it a little bit in my Substack why it stood out to me. And I think it's Beyonce leveraging humor felt really new because she's so, like, you know, the image of perfection and this guarded mystique that makes you want to know more. But I feel like she kind of showed her personality in like a relatable way and wasn't afraid to be silly. And I think it paid off. Like, she broke the internet for like the third or fourth time in her career or something. But on the global humor side, that also makes me think about when I was at YouTube, like we did have a hard time with the Instagram, like finding like what, like memes, like we were talking about memes working or content working with even just dialogue because the handle was so global. Like I think it was only like 20% US and 80% everywhere else around the world, like a lot of like Brazil and Mexico and Singapore followings. And so in that sense, like a lot of our funny posts just flopped because it didn't work either in the dialogue, like, you know, the jokes weren't landing or not. So we ended up going more towards like visual gags, things that don't need language or cultural context to like mesmerize or make people want to watch. So yeah, I think the globalness is definitely a tough one to crack.
Yeah, Rob, does this come up with your clients that they want something that can work all around the world?
It's a really beefy question. I love it to pieces. And I love, you mentioned Monty Python, right? Every country will have their references for, you know, what's funny. And I think there is a spectrum which can almost be summed up from British comedy of kind of, there's Mr. Bean and then there's Monty Python. And I think, as Hunter mentioned, when you start simplifying, you know, the gag, the old human tropes of seeing someone fall over or the more kind of German Schadenfreude, or the British kind of eccentric Monty Python. You know, the most global you can be is Mr. Bean, technically the biggest selling global comedy of all time. Does everyone find that funny? Do some countries want more advanced comedy? Almost certainly. But I think that is an element of global advertising. Some of the most successful I can think of are things are a bit slapstick, but, you know, were they found funny? I think like Snickers, when they did, replaced when you're not you and you're hungry, and then you replace it with another character, I think was universally pretty funny because it's quite a simple construct in terms of, can you give me something which is funny everywhere? You have to go back to the universals. And actually, again, straight back to Tarrant on TV, all the ads were about, you know, births, deaths, marriages, kind of love, somebody, you know, getting, you know, Mr. Bean type character. So they do, and Lindsay's right, there are many known passages of, you know, what some would find funny. And then you had like the Americans growing up being the best kind of script writing comedy as well, filling that void for 20 years and making all the funny sitcoms. So I can't remember your question, but it's a difficult thing to do. Yes, it is, but you have to kind of lower down lowest common denominator if you're looking for something universally funny. And then even then, some countries will say not funny, and others, they'll have in jokes the whole way through. So no, it is difficult, but you can draw a line through it. And then also, what is funny? When I find something really funny, I barely laugh out loud, basically. I'll be smiling in the mind really intensely, kind of going, oh, that's funny. And it's like, well, why aren't you responding? I'm like, because I'm enjoying it up here. But when something's laugh out loud, it's quite rare. But there'll be normally a Schadenfreude and then you get into editing and timing and blah, blah, blah. Too many things in that question for me, Eliza. I love it.
I'm just thinking of your poor team if you're like, I'm smiling intensely in the mind.
Exactly, yeah.
But I think of the funniest ads I feel like I've seen. I think you're right about the Skittle, not, I was going to say Skittles. Snickers. Snickers are you're not you when you're hungry stuff. That's work because everyone recognises that hangry kind of thing and how it changes you. But the Skittles ads that have, which are now probably, 15 years old or something, annoying. But they actually make me think a bit of those kind of 90s British ads and that kind of surreal, like the one with the rabbit. I mean, I'll probably have to put some links in this with this podcast, but I still now, if I watch that, it still actually properly makes me laugh out loud. But Lindsay, what do you think on this? Is there, when you're doing stuff at Channel 4, I'm presuming you're kind of aiming at a broadly British audience, or are you looking more global?
No, we're completely domestic. So we have the absolute joy of hoping that 65% of people are going to get the reference. It's quite funny when we fill out, you know, the bits in, whether it's Cannes or DNA, the international award shows that say, are there any cultural or contextual things you want the judges to know? And you sort of at that point feel like just giving up and not entering because you're like, the whole thing. Like, I think, you know, we are well aware that a lot of what we do does not travel, and I think because it doesn't travel, it makes it effective for where we are. But I think, you know, as I love the phrase that Rob just used, highest common denominator, because I think yes, you're still trying to find. And even in a British audience, it's broad and you're still trying to find things that resonate with people. But I mean, one of my favourite things recently, the Yorkshire Tea Pack Your Bags, which what I love about that piece of work is it looks like somebody just went, get on with it. And like they had a really good time making it. And I think sometimes with work that has a load of humour and joy to it, you really get a sense that people have enjoyed doing it. I think with that, it's got an insight that everybody across Britain, they understand the reference, even if it's not themselves. Do you know what I mean? So it's taking it from that. That's incredibly hard to do globally, incredibly hard to do. It's why I've hidden within Channel 4 for 5 years, so I haven't had to do that challenge. But I think it's tough. But I think, look, you know, when I think about the comedies that I have really loved recently, things like Big Boys that Jack Rutt wrote on Channel 4, or Dreaming Whilst Black, or Ghosts, which going back, you know, as Rob said, that's got, you know, you see it's got about 17 writers on that. There's real heart to it. And I think when something, it's the old David Corbus thing of like comedy dates, wit endures, and wit has heart in it and it has humanity in it. And I think we're seeing a lot of what is hot right now, in inverted commas, in comedy has that. And I think advertising comedy is doing that as well now, is speaking to insights being true. We are seeing a lot more comedy now, going back to the earlier question. Not all of it's good, right? I think we can all say not all of it's good. And it's really easy to try and be wacky or surreal or irreverent. And it goes back to the thing of like, doesn't always work. It works when it comes back to humanity and heart and an insight. And yeah, it's sort of the heart and the humanity is easy to do globally. It is, sometimes it's the insight that you struggle with a bit. But I think, yeah, I think the broader point of where things are at the moment, just stuff having a bit of heart in it, is when actually it works.
I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it, in the way of what we were talking about the kind of gloom that actually a sort of kind of nastier comedy, which obviously does exist, and certainly maybe not from brands, but in the kind of, you know, stand-up world and stuff, it's, you know, I would imagine it's pretty hard for a brand to go near that kind of thing successfully.
Well, I think you remember when one of the biggest comedies in the world was Curb Your Enthusiasm, right? That's really hard comedy for a brand to go near. You know, it's nihilistic and it's brutal. And I think that's what I mean, is a lot of the comedies that are doing well now, particularly in the UK, aren't like that. And I think we do mirror what is happening culturally in the kind of mood and the entertainment that people are, you know, responding to. And so I think, I don't know, maybe clients feel easier now with that kind of thing. I'm not saying it is easy, because it's not. But I think, yeah, if you, that side of comedy, I suppose, is more palatable for an audience than just pure snark.
Certainly. And what about different generations? Hunter, do you think everybody can laugh at the same kind of comedy? Or, I mean, sometimes I do feel aware, and we've already talked about this here, of the things that your comedy references as you grow up, that, and I've seen that in some UK advertising where there has been a bit of nostalgic referencing of some of those classic 90s ads. But would that mean anything to someone who's like Gen Z or even millennial? Would they care about that? Does it matter?
I think it definitely matters. I think Lindsay was saying too about finding the insight of what can resonate in like a British audience. Like, I feel like that is, knowing your audience is so critical for humor. So I think if you're targeting Gen Z specifically, they're definitely going to be way different. It was also making me think about, like, even if I just throw something I think is funny on my Instagram story, my mom will sometimes think it's like a cry for help, but I think it's just like a funny post or something. Like, she just doesn't quite get like my humor even. But with Gen Z, like, I was working at YouTube, and in my new role, like, we target Gen Z a lot. So I always say I'm legally a millennial, but I feel like I'm paid to think like Gen Z. And I've done like some research about just the style of humor with Gen Z is very surrealist and like Dadaist. And I think there's interesting parallels with the Dadaism reference from like World War One. That's when Dadaism was born. It was kind of like everyone was making this crazy weird art to like look the other way from World War One. And I think if you look at the timeline of Gen Z coming up in the recession and these other wars and the explosion of tech and everything, I think their humor is loaded with irony and surrealism to like kind of also escape from that reality. And so I think that is just hugely innately different in how they came up than the older generation. So I think also, just sorry, my mind's kind of bouncing everywhere, but going back to the global thing, I think something that's hard for bigger brands that want to just keep scaling and reaching bigger audiences is they have to be like decisive on who they talk to. And so if you really want to resonate with like a Gen Z or something, you have to be decisive in targeting that, or else it's not going to land with anyone.
I feel like there is and can be a very beautiful thing happening with Gen Z. Actually, the very best of Gen X's comedy, and I think you'll agree, Lindsay, was always the people repackaging. You know, comedy is packaging the truth and somebody accepting that truth. And the way you're doing it is, you know, the more kind of elaborate or new or fresh, as long as you're remaining true to that, probably referencing a universal condition of, you know, embarrassment or suffering or something. And so comedy is constantly, the very best of comedy has always been pushing that envelope. And although Curb Your Enthusiasm at the time looked like it was just, you know, following, essentially it looks like it's following the life of someone working in that world, but that hadn't really been done that well before, you know? So, or actually Monty Python was completely, Hunter, as you say, like the Dadaist, it's entirely that, you know, it's as abstract and weird as some of the cool stuff on the internet just now. And then there are even literal relations to that. So when I have my kids coming up and singing Berries and Cream from, you know, the ad, I'm like, okay, so that's just been around for 20 years and it skipped it. And they're coming and saying, hey, have you seen this? Have you seen this? And I'm like, what do you mean, have I seen it? My friend wrote it. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. They're like, oh, my dad, you never would have seen stuff like this. And I'm like, no, everyone in my generation invented that stuff, you crazy fools. So there is a lovely moment. I love that idea of comedy going into those new artistic spaces to still be able to tell a truth. It's such a lovely journey. And I don't know, it's why I'm equally excited for both of those things. But I think, yeah, I think the old school is the new school is the old school. You know, it's kind of, well, you're quoting Dada, you know, it's been around. It's fantastic. It's exciting.
Yes, I guess my point about nostalgia is only relevant if you were there the first time. Otherwise, it's just something new and funny, right?
Yeah.
So continuing on this thing of where comedy can and can't go, I wanted to chat a bit about, there's been a sort of a lot of use of comedy around, I guess, difficult subjects, and particularly around climate change. There seems to have been a number. There's obviously been long form films that have used comedy to discuss that. And there's been a lot of ads. Lindsay, Four Creative did a great ad last year for your climate change series of programming and the kind of carbon skid marks ads. It felt quite risque still at the time. Talk me through that. Was there a sense that you weren't taking that subject seriously enough, or did you really realise that being a bit anarchic would actually help get people to talk about it?
Yeah, and you know what? And I start this answer with a caveat that I realise it is not to everybody's tastes, right? I think it is the most complained. It was the most complained about thing on Channel 4 last year, like on all of Channel 4 last year, all of which got thrown out by Ofcom because, of course, you know. Yes, we definitely came at it with it can't just be a straight, serious thing. One in which it felt there is so much quite frightening, boring wallpaper about that subject in order to get, you know, to try it. And what we were trying to do was tell a story of it's not on us, it's on those with power, right, to change things. So we were trying to say something sort of new. And if we said that in the way that everything else had been said, it would have just got swept up and all. I think actually even on Creative Review today, Eliza, I clicked on this before this, and I think you've got a title saying, like, I'm paraphrasing, but why is sustainability advertising so dull? And I think that's why we came in. And also, we're Channel 4, and there is, you have a responsibility there to do something that is a bit anarchic or a bit different or a bit creatively risky, or however you want to term, you know, what the DNA of the brand is. So I think for us, it felt like it had to. And through creative development, we had various stuff on the table, and the stuff that felt a bit polite and a bit, it didn't feel right for us. So I think the important thing with this, and I think, again, look, with all comedies, it's crafted really well. The important thing with this was, if we'd have shot it and it looked like, I'm going to say it looked like shit, which is the wrong term to be using when discussing this ad, right? But if it looked rubbish, or the cinematography wasn't great, or if it looked cheap, I think the whole thing would have felt cheap. And so it became actually like a production imperative that this thing looked cinematic and it looked expensive and all of those kind of things in order for that quite base joke to land. You know, you had to sort of overcompensate in order for it to be, you know, for the humor to be taken seriously. And I think that's essentially what the whole point of this conversation is, right? It's how seriously do we take humor? And I think, you know, we have to.
Out of interest, the complaints that you got, were they complaining about making fun of a serious subject, or were they complaining about skid marks, basically?
No, they were complaining about why there's skid marks on my TV when I'm trying to feed my kids tea. Like, they are exactly what you would expect them to be. And a lot of just like, oh, this is pure our basis, Channel 4. You know, I think sometimes it's just confirmation bias, isn't it? People are looking for something to have a go about. But oh, no, it wasn't like climate change is really important and you're taking the piss out of it. You know, it got talked about in Parliament. There was a whole thing with the DCMS where, they used that term. And I think if we'd have put out something that didn't make people a bit cross, then it doesn't get talked about in Parliament. So I think sometimes, yeah, you have to get the elbows out a bit, I think.
But are there sort of things that where comedy just can never be used? Or is there an element where, you know, the black humour or the kind of, I don't know, it could be used in anything?
I'm so curious to see this climate change ad about skid marks. Like, just hearing about it without seeing it, I'm can't wait to Google that after this. But I lean towards the camp of, you know, something we've talked about quite a bit today, and I think Lindsay said it beautifully at the beginning, of there's tragedy in comedy, like talking about climate change in a way that is, you're able to find the light in it, is refreshing, because we're so intimidated by like this daunting problem. We're fatigued by how much like the crisis we hear about all the time. So I feel like it's nice to share in like the humorous angle, but I'm sure like, you know, war is probably off limits. Like, I'm like, we would probably draw the line at something like in the violent space. I don't know.
I think just to say about the skid mark one, probably it's important to note that the ad is about criticizing people in power who are not doing anything about climate change, and it being kind of put upon the everyday person to do their bit, and that will be enough. And it's sort of making the argument that those in power have these carbon skid marks because they're living it up while and they're the ones who could truly make a difference. So I suppose maybe some of the acceptance of it for those who did sort of see the humor of it was that it was mocking people in power, maybe makes it easier.
It punches up, which is what Channel 4 we always do. We have to at four, and I think it's, you know, yes. So I think even if you're disgusted by it, it's sort of the point being you should be disgusted by those who really aren't doing quite enough.
I think it's amazing that the purpose or the intention of the comedy is implicitly understood, even in human settings, when somebody will say, oh, well, that was a bit, you know, you went a bit far, because it wasn't necessary. But if you're punching up, you know, the motive to your comedy, or if you're, it is taken into consideration with how funny it is. Like, you know, an out of time joke, out of place from the wrong authority is, you know, has a very, very negative spin. But if this is Channel 4 looking for change, you're protected by the purpose to an extent. And I was wondering when it would, like, again, with climate change, if you look at, I thought Apple did a great job on the Mother Nature spot. It's taking a very awkward truth that a lot of companies are running away from, which is, oh shit, we're not, you know, that's the truth. We're not quite doing enough in line with our responsibility of scale. But then Apple have, I can see many brands just wanting to do, you know, a corporate video of the stuff they're doing, but they're going in naked because they're not really backing what they're doing. Obviously, or what Apple are doing is a lot, or appears to be a lot, from this advert, and it lands in comedy, it kind of wins two or three times. I think it's really good. And back to Lindsay's point, that's because of actually the casting, the acting, the writing is really high quality. So it lands, you know. If it was poor crafting, they tried to make that comedy, it wouldn't land. It'd land really badly. So yeah, it's comedy's timing, isn't it? And authorship.
Yes, and that kept it in firmly in keeping with Apple's brand, because obviously, and this is true of Channel 4 as well, actually, that you're you're known for, you know, doing high quality, but often quite anarchic stuff. Apple is, you know, for Apple to do a lo-fi ad would feel quite a surprise, I suppose. So it's sort of interesting to think of the stuff, Hunter, that you're talking about on YouTube, which often is much more loose, and maybe that's actually harder for a brand to do well in a kind of comedy space, because you're really then testing the boundaries of authenticity. I don't know.
I'd just like to say that is, I think, the first and last time that Channel 4's budgets and Apple's budgets will be talked about in the same breath.
You do a lot with your budgets, let's put it that way. Okay, I think we're going to have to kind of wrap it up, but I suppose I kind of just want to hear where you think this might go, because it does feel like a bit of a trend, and trends sort of come and flow and come and go. And for me, as someone who writes about advertising a lot, it's an utter relief, to be honest, to be out of the kind of serious brand, you know, the kind of purpose brand marketing stuff, and into something more comedic. But I'm guessing that at some point that might start to kind of lose its allure as well. So where does it go? Where does it go with things like social and YouTube and so on? Hunter, I'm coming to you as I just said that. Where do you see it all going?
I hope it doesn't go away. I hope there's more of it. I think, like we talked about quite a bit, like even with the Dadaism thing being 100 years ago, I feel like there's always people resort to humor in dark times and good times. I think it'll just be like the evolving media that we see. I mean, even like, not to get into AI too much, but I feel like there's so much humor around like making fun of AI and how it's not human and doesn't get the nuance, and like then people find that like ironic and stuff. But I think as we keep getting into new ways of creation, like the jokes will change, but comedy will stay the same. I don't know, but yeah, I'm hopeful it'll stay, because I think it's a lot more fun.
It totally is. And that's interesting you say about AI, because of course that feels too powerful at the moment, doesn't it? So again, it's that, in a way, you're kind of punching up against some technology that feels unnerving. Rob, what do you think? Where are we going with all this?
I think it will actually get stronger. So, and particularly because of AI. So we'll need the human reminders. I've always felt that kind of a good comic or funny person, when they get something right, they're essentially saying they've kind of understood and touched the human condition. Like, I know that sounds very, very grand, but really that's what comedy is doing. It's for people to laugh. They're feeling so relaxed that you've got something so right and you're releasing it in a certain way. It's going to become a God-given gift when AI tries to do it and can't replicate the timing or, you know, the shape of it. So no, I think, and I think businesses now are realizing the value and the share price of the entertainment studios. So if you're looking for comedy to entertain, I think it's only growing. And there's quite a bit of work, which I'm excited about, because Hunter, I've learned so much listening to you talk, but I think they are slightly different camps, although they come from the same place, and there's a specific kind of internet humor. And I think it's different from the more constructed, longer formats of comedy. There is a difference at the moment, and I'm seeing the they are joining somewhere in editing. There you go. It's going towards editing. There you go, Eliza. Editing is the future.
What, making them shorter, or do you mean just as well constructed?
But yeah, no, it's bringing different. We're getting used to different shapes and seeing images and timing, in terms of back to timing again. So I think timing is becoming more important in the macro, but specifically in those smaller units. Like some of the stuff trending with kind of the sounds of, you know, like a duck hitting a door and then a basketball doing a thing, and then you're getting into a loop, and you're like, this is great editing, in a sense. And I think when the worlds begin to meet in the middle of those a bit more comfortable with long form and voice and thing, I think it's great. It's going to go somewhere very interesting. But it'll, universally, comedy will be here to stay. The humans require it.
Totally. And like you say, it's interesting. There's so many different ways you can do it. And I'm enjoying the fact that craft is coming out so well of this conversation. Lindsay, let's finish on you. What are the conversations you're having? Is it work, the comedy route working? It always has for Channel 4, I'm guessing, but...
Yeah, it has. And I think speaking sort of more broadly as the trend, it's great. And as Rob says, you know, we need it as human beings. And so hopefully it'll stay. I guess and this sounds much less modern than talking about AI, so you can go in the sort of Luddite box at the end. I think it's about selling stuff. You know, it's like, it's when we were in purpose land, you could kind of forget, and you could sort of, you know, you could convince a client of something because it was purpose and it was good in the world. And it was, but if you want to make a funny ad, you better have a reason for it. And I think actually, you know what, and that goes back to your classic 30 seconds and all of those, it's just sort of comedy that sells stuff. And I think, you know, if we can make those two things work together, then I think that's it, right? That's the winner.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's true. The sort of entertaining and giving someone a bit of joy and flogging them something at the same time is maybe more palatable than some of the other methods, especially at the moment.
Sugar makes the medicine go down in marketing.
Exactly. All right. Well, look, that seems a good note to close on. Huge thank you to you all. Thanks to Lindsay, Rob and Hunter for being so witty and insightful. I think that was good. We kind of laughed a bit along the way while also...
Rob didn't. Rob just said, that's very funny.
Rob smiled intensely in the mind, which is good. and thank you all for listening to the show. I hope you all enjoyed it. If you did, please don't be afraid to share it with everybody you know. Obviously, that is how people hear it, so that'll be really helpful. And we'll be back very soon with some more episodes of Creativity Sucks. Thanks again.